Hey, Warners, this is your warning that the following episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About went a bit rogue from the beginning. You know, one of those episodes where we started the show before we started the show, you know, we were recording and then things happened. So put on your big girl panties and buckle up for the ride with Rachel Pitts, Keith Walters, and yours truly, Gina Tremarco. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About.
The podcast that makes business sexy again.
So sexy. You sounding sexier than usual. And I think you are sexier than usual because you've been doing some stuff.
I am sexier than usual. Honestly, I am. That could be a whole nother episode because from the episode that we did with Rick Katoof to now, things have shifted again, and I'm just, it's really interesting. Like, I've been meaning to blog about my process of what we're talking about as I'm preparing to do a bikini competition, a bikini fitness competition. But I haven't had the time to commit to doing that because I'm very busy with the mortgage industry right now.
Wait, you haven't had time for which, blogging or the bikini contest?
Sorry, I haven't had time to blog about my training. My training all happens before all y'all are up, and I promise you, you're not awake when I'm training, because I used to get up at 5, but now I get up at 4.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Because I like it. I like it. I like it. There's no one there.
You know, there's something nice, I think, when I do have to get up that early for something. Back in the day, it was usually travel. I'm like, why don't I do this every day?
Oh, I love the morning. And so it was 5 o'clock. Then it got to be 4:30. And then I'm like, well, I guess I better get up at 4 because that way I can get, there's a whole routine. Get up, take the dog out for a little walk, then take all my supplements, eat a little breakfast, then go to the gym. So that all takes about a half an hour. So if I want to be at the gym starting my workout at 5, I got to be up at 4.
Unless you're late, which is a funny story because I ran into Rachel at the gym a couple weeks ago at 7 a.m., which for me was early. And Rachel goes, are you early or am I late? Because that was late for you to be there at 7.
Super late. Super late.
I forgot to post that picture. I need to post that picture.
I posted it. You can see it on Instagram on our page. Yeah. Women Never Warned You About.
So you have definitely been sexy, upping your game. And we'll probably talk about this on another episode. On the episode, we're going to talk about creative constraints. So remind me about that because I think you'll correct me on it. Some of that has come out of just everything that's gone on this year. I could be wrong, but we'll touch on that on another episode. But today, what I wanted to talk about is kind of like, I want to interview you. I want to talk about what's going on in the real estate market, in the mortgage market, in your world. We don't really talk so much in detail about what you and I do separately in our business lives. We touch on it, but we don't really go into detail. And you had a career shift a little over a year ago, moving from real estate agent to mortgage, which was a shift for you. It's still sales. It's still a sales job. I don't think a lot of people think about mortgage as a sales job.
It absolutely is a sales job.
100%. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. And I also want to talk about how the pandemic has impacted real estate and mortgages. And this has been fresh on my mind. And the reason why I wanted to talk about it is as I'm going through some life changes and have been holding off on buying real estate for a few reasons, I have to start thinking about the things I need to do in order to be prepared for that, because a couple of years ago you tried to help me, but I had kind of some financial issues that prevented me from getting a mortgage, and that's before you were in mortgage. And I think this is a good topic to talk about for anyone, but especially women who might be on their own or single moms or just single and divorced women that are being impacted financially and what means for them. So there's a couple angles here I want to talk about. I want to talk about your world and how you made that transition and how mortgage is a sales job, and then getting into the financial impact. Is that cool with you, Rachel Pitts?
Sounds fair. I can talk for a long, long time about all those subjects.
So the name of the mortgage company you work for is?
U.S. Mortgage Corporation. We're based out of New York State, and we have branches in every state of the union. So wherever you are, I can help you.
Fantastic. And of course, you'll be able to find information on Rachel on our website, womenyourmotherwarnsyouabout.com. You find all the things there, all the social things and contact stuff if you want to reach out to Rachel on that. So let's first talk about how you switched from real estate to mortgage. Just kind of unpack that a little bit for our listeners.
I have sold real estate for 10 years prior to moving over to mortgage, and I was recruited. My branch manager, Mike Fitzpatrick, who is a young genius, he's fantastic. And I actually had a relationship with him when I was a real estate agent. He was kind of courting me and he was doing his sales. I didn't really realize it at the time as much as I do now being on this side, that how he was actually using sales techniques on me as a mortgage loan officer. He went to a national convention last year in, I believe, May or June. And what he noticed was that the top 15 producers of the entire company were women, and he had no women in his branch. And he I'm super flattered. He told me I was the very first person that he called. Because there's only actually two ways to recruit in mortgage. You either steal somebody from another mortgage company or you groom somebody from zero. And he knew, Mike knew that I was a go-getter and I'm super motivated and all that things. And he just called me up and was like, I mean, what do you think about switching over to the mortgage side? And it was good timing because I was in a position. I was doing really well in real estate at that moment, but I was in a position where I didn't understand a lot of the aspects of the mortgage side of things, which a lot of consumers and also a lot of real estate agents don't understand all the workings. It's a pretty complicated process, made more complicated by COVID-19. And so when he asked me, I was like, you know what? Let me take a look at that. And then I did some digging. I did research. I spoke to other people in the company. I spoke to other females in the company. And I was mostly like looking for what's the pitfall? Like, what's the part that's going to suck? Tell me the part that's going to suck. And really, what I was told is the part that's going to suck is the same as every other sales job, is that you've got to be out there selling and prospecting and finding business. And if you aren't doing that, then that's the part that sucks. So it definitely is a sales job. The difference is that on the mortgage side, I'm generally not selling to consumers as often as I'm selling to real estate agents, because real estate agents and those relationships that I have with real estate agents is where the bulk of my business comes from. I do get, you know, referral business from friends or what have you, but most of it comes from agents who are working with prospective buyers who send them my way because they know, like, and trust me. And even in the beginning, I was doing really well in the beginning because I already had all these relationships with real estate agents built in.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really a switch in audiences. So you went from business to consumer to business.
Yeah.
Technically. Right. So two different types of sales and who you want to work with. I'm going to guess that it's equally, just because I know you, that it's equally emotional in the process. Your eyes just rolled in the back of your head. Is it equally or even more emotional? Because I know when you're dealing with trying to sell a home or help someone buy a home, there's a lot of emotions wrapped up into that. But let's talk a little bit about the emotions around mortgages.
Well, when I was selling real estate, and this analogy I came up with recently, when I was selling real estate, and real estate agents, if you're listening, you'll relate to this, that it's it's a little bit like walking through one of those labyrinth, like the labyrinth made of hedges, like in The Shining, you know?
Yeah.
That you're like wandering around with these buyers, you're trying to find them a home, and sometimes you find your way to the destination. Sometimes you run into a brick wall. Sometimes you just feel like you're walking around forever and not getting anywhere. And that is the experience that I remember in selling real estate, is sometimes you work with a buyer and they're just like, bing, bing, bing. And you show them three places, like on House Hunters, and they buy one. But most of the time, it's not that process. It's,
wouldn't that be so easy, like the TV show?
It's totally not that at all. Incidentally, I did do a House Hunters episode a few years ago.
Yes, everybody does need to go check that out.
I'll try to find the link, and so Doug can post it.
So we can put it in the show notes, because you got to go watch Rachel on that show.
And that is a whole nother episode too. It was a fun experience. Most of the time it's you're looking. Sometimes I've looked with people. I remember looking with people for 2 days solid for 8 hours a day, and then have them go, you know what? We're just not ready right now. It's hard. But in mortgage, it's not like walking through a labyrinth. It's like walking down a hallway where you're running the gauntlet. You don't know what door is going to open on the side of you and clobber you with something that the buyer didn't tell you about this other property, or suddenly they go and buy a refrigerator for $5,000 and throw their debt to income, or like there's all these pitfalls. Yesterday I ran into it as well. It was like, oh my gosh, we're like 3 days before closing and the condo questionnaire came back and it was totally messed up and everything's crazy, and I had to like do some serious detective work to save the deal. You never know what's going to happen as you walk down this hallway, and then you're like, yes, we're almost cleared to close. There it is. I see the end of the hallway. And then you get to the end of the hallway and it's just another hallway, because then you've got to move to the next file and do it. So it's a lot more, I do like the fact that it's faster paced and there's always something to do. Like I remember selling real estate and sometimes wondering like, where's the next buyer going to come from? I hope I can find something, you know, just who's next. In mortgage, there's always a who's next. As soon as my pipeline started kind of rolling.
Well, yeah, there's always someone next once you're working in the pipeline. You still have to work on your pipeline, because I know you were working super hard, and I know that because you were super stressed.
Yeah, and in the beginning, it's like any other sales situation that in the beginning when I first started, I just basically printed out the list of the 4,500 realtors in Myrtle Beach area and started calling them one by one. And luckily for me, most of them would be like, hey, Rachel, what's up? And so I would just say, hey, I just moved over to the mortgage industry and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of people already have their lender and what have you. But I figured, hey, man, if I can get like 10 realtors who trust me and send me their business, then I'm good. So I do. I've got a handful that love me. They send me all their stuff. And, I'm always kind of working towards more. Now, full disclosure, in the last few months, the mortgage industry has been incredibly busy. And I'll rewind back to the beginning of COVID in a second. But it's just so busy that I don't have very much time to prospect. And on a team sales call this week, we were talking about prospecting again, because, you know, you always have to keep continuously touching on people the way that you do in every other sales scenario. So rewind back to when COVID first started. Right before COVID hit in March was this huge refi boom that happened at the end of February.
Because the rates were dropping.
Because the rates were super, super low. So there was, and I'm going to try to explain this well, and I hope that I do. So if you think about, you know, if you think of all of the money that's available to be lent to consumers, there's only so much that can be lent. And when all of that money is tied up in refinances, then it sort of reaches a point where it did right before COVID hit, where it was like, okay, we have reserved all this money that we're lending out that's being refinanced. So we'd need to kind of put the brakes on of more happening. So then that caused the rates to kind of go up. And it created this little perfect storm of like, oh, and then let's introduce COVID to freak everybody out. And everybody, all of the investors who are meaning the top level investors who are purchasing these and trading out these loans with Freddie and Fannie and all of that, they all kind of put the brakes on too. So then the interest rates kind of went up to sort of slow down that refi boom that happened at the end of February. And then everything was really uncertain and bananas in March. The rates went really high for a second. It was really to slow down the bleeding, if you will, of how much business, because, you know, that was like a huge refi boom. And it all sort of slowed down. Then everybody was wondering, well, what's going to happen? Because here comes forbearance. Now,
let's unpack that a little bit for those who don't know what forbearance is.
So forbearance, what a lot of the banks did and when COVID hit was, okay, boom, the economy shut down. We don't know what the hell's going on. So we're going to allow you guys to not pay your mortgage for a minute. That made me very nervous. There were three scenarios that consumers could select. And a lot of the banks just threw you in forbearance regardless. They threw all their loans in forbearance. So actually there's four scenarios. One was you could be in forbearance and still pay your mortgage on time, which is what I hope that you did, if you could have. Some people, I talked to at least one person that was like, well, I'm just going to go into forbearance. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And I was like, dude, if you can pay your mortgage, just pay it on time and pretend like it doesn't exist.
So that just means you don't have to pay for a while.
What, forbearance?
Forbearance, yeah.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
So that would be the scenario number one, is the bank threw you in forbearance and sent you a letter or called you and you just were like, okay, fine, and you keep paying. The second scenario is they'll allow you to be in forbearance for, I think it was maybe 3 to 6 months, depending on your institution. That allows you to not pay because you maybe had lost your job or were, you know, in financial straits and things weren't the same. And they would then either, one, at the end of the 3 or 6 months, ask for the full amount in full, the full payment of whatever that time period that you didn't pay. Number two, they could take that full balloon payment and tack it on to the very end of your loan. So meaning if you had 20 more years left on your loan, that at the end of those 20 years, boom, you owe those 3 to 6 months in a balloon payment. Or best case scenario, which is basically extend the life of the loan, if you will. And so you kind of were put on pause for like 3 months. And then you start paying again the same amount and you just
extend
the three payments that you missed are stuck on the end of the loan, which sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And I cautioned everyone who called me, because a lot of people called me wondering what to do, and said, just be sure you get in writing from your institution what they're going to do so that you are not surprised or totally fucked. And what's happening now is some of these institutions, starting on the 1st of this past month, sent out bills saying, okay, happy September 1st. You didn't pay April 1st, May 1st, June, July, August 1st, and now it's September 1st. So that's 6 months of payments. So you owe us 6 months of payments. It's due on October 1st, or we're going into foreclosure. So people are getting a bill that's like, you know, if your mortgage is $1,000 a month, they're getting their mortgage bill. It says it's $6,000 and you better pay it by next month or you're going to foreclosure.
So unless you had a situation where is like, well, it's going to be extended at the end of your mortgage.
Right.
But your point is if did they get that in writing?
Did they get it in writing? So that's just something that is starting to happen. It's gonna happen to some people, and it'll be interesting to see, because there's been this kind of feeling out there of like, hey, we're getting this extra unemployment, and hey, I'm in forbearance, and hey, big party, and also a feeling of misery of like, this sucks, I can't go anywhere and have to wear a mask when I do, and there's been just this weird stuff going on. It's gonna show up, and it's gonna be interesting. Now, the second part of that is, if you are in forbearance and suddenly you want to sell your house or, you know, refinance or whatever, how is that going to affect you? Now, this has changed, and hopefully I have the most update information for you when you hear this, because it was different at first. It was, you're going to have 12 full months of mortgage payments on time before you can get a mortgage or refinance. Now, it's shifted that as long as you bring it back current or have worked out some sort of payment plan with your institution, then we can look at it, because it's going to sort of depend. Some scenarios will be that you still have to wait 3 months, but it's not 12 months anymore because the COVID and forbearance scenario is so unique. It's not, you know, if I look at your credit report and it's in the past has shown that you were late on like 3 or 4 mortgage payments, you got to show 12 solid months of paying on time before I can really help you. That is a big one.
So if you were in forbearance, you can't show that.
If you're in forbearance, it's going to show up on your credit report, period.
And so
it will show up. You're not hiding from it. So in forbearance, if it shows up that you didn't pay on time for the last few months, then obviously we're going to know, because it states forbearance mm-hmm. on the credit report usually, but also we're going to know. And then what we have to find out is, are you current, or do you have documentation proving that even though you're not current, that you've worked something out with your institution? Yeah. So there's got to be proof there, but just be forewarned that if you have been in forbearance and haven't been paying, because I do know some individuals who were thrown into forbearance by their bank, and they just went ahead and paid monthly. I have another friend who went into forbearance, and they didn't pay because they were kind of like, well, what if? What they did instead was take their mortgage payment and put it in a separate bank account, so that if it all comes due, or if they want to be able to, you know, sell their house or what have you, that they have that money set aside. So I just hope and pray that if you're sitting there in forbearance, then that it'll all work out.
So really, forbearance means you don't have to pay right now.
That is what it
in simple
was
terms
trying yeah. to be. That's what it was trying
so
to
So it's
be.
Like you can take this time off to use that money for other things, or put it, like you said, in a bank account, and then when it comes due, you pay it. And right. some people didn't necessarily pay attention to that. And I'm guessing there's also people that, you know, maybe their jobs didn't come back. Maybe they're still sitting in this right. mess. There's all the fear around COVID coming back, because flu season is upon us and everything is going to repeat itself. And what's that going to mean, as unemployment benefits have ended? And they've been talking about 6 weeks now in Congress about bringing that back for those people who are still not working. 6 weeks has passed. So there are people out there who have not been able to get their jobs back and have no unemployment benefits and could be in forbearance, and it's only going to get worse. And I know you're not an economist, but what's your opinion on some of the trickle-down effect that can come from all of this?
Well, from my perspective as a mortgage, working in the mortgage industry, is the scenario I describe, where people are getting these huge bills that they can't pay. It's possible that it will create a bunch of foreclosures, which will, I mean, if you're looking for a cheap investment property, then it'll be a good thing for you, but it's going to be really bad for all these people that are going to lose their homes, which will consequently drive prices down. Prices have been driven up in our particular market, up and up and up and up, because the demand is so high, which we'll get to in a minute. But it will cause a little bit of a downturn in pricing, which is interesting, because at the beginning of COVID, there was an interview that was done with my branch manager, Mike Fitzpatrick, with Barry Habib. He's very knowledgeable in the mortgage industry, and he talked about that there'd be a downturn in pricing in Q3 anyway. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. From an economic standpoint, it's a little frightening. If you go, I was sitting with Felix a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, you know, because overall, the mortgage industry is booming. I mean, it's interesting because we thought when this all started, we're like, oh God, this is going to be terrible. But what we've seen in our area, in the Myrtle Beach area, is there's just been, it's been off the hook of all the people moving. A lot of people moved down here from the Northeast, and that area has been the most affected by COVID in my, you know, mm-hmm. to my knowledge. So those people are like, get me the heck out of here, get me out of the city, get me to the suburbs. So the demand has been super high and very fast, which is why I was so busy the last few months, as well as the interest rates have been super low. So refinancing went back to a boom in the last month or so. So there's like tons of refi business. There's tons of real estate business. People are selling their homes so fast in our area. And then I spoke to one of the loan officers in our company up in New Jersey about somebody selling their house up there. And I was like, oh yeah, it's probably going to be hard to sell it up there. He's like, nope, so fast. Selling homes so fast, especially in suburban areas. That's like downtown New York City. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it is regional. And Keith and I talked about that the other day. He wanted to be on the show, but he couldn't be here today. Which is kind of funny. Just a side note, because I was talking to Doug about Keith, and Keith's like, Doug's like, hey, where is Keith? It's like he went out and bought a pack of cigarettes and never came back.
Yeah, right. No, that was me. I came back.
But Keith and I had a conversation about it, and in the Dallas market, you know, it's they can't keep up. Like that's like there's no problem selling and buying.
It's interesting. It feels surreal, which everything feels surreal in 2020. It feels surreal because I have been so busy. Like when people would ask me about my stress levels, they're like, oh, COVID's stressing you out. I'm like, no, it's not. I have so much business right now. I'm super stressed and trying to be grateful, but it's so crazy. But there's also so many people that are hurting. So it's just a very have and have not kind of scenario.
Yeah, I was just to say, you and I just talked about this the other day, that it is very have and have not. Some industries are doing really great and people are killing it, and some industries are not doing so great. You know,
and may disappear.
Yeah, I posted something a week or so ago about the hospitality industry, which I have a lot of experience in, and I had a lot of clients in that vertical for training. And you know, the reality is. You know, hotels are not going to bounce back for a while, and everything around hotels, attractions and whatnot, are not an airfare, like things like that, are not going to bounce back as fast. And I'd posted something about, you know, don't be judging those employees that may be still sitting at home on unemployment because they're not working. Well, they're hospitality workers. And someone snapped on me, an HR type of person, who's like, what are you saying, that they don't have a skill set to go do that? You know, some people are just sitting at home lazy. And I'm like, I'm not saying they don't have a skill set to move into a new job, but it's not that easy. It's not cut and dry like that. If I'm a bartender, you might not decide to hire me to be, I don't know, an IT person. I mean, it's not that easy to just transfer into another industry. Yes, there are some transferable skills, but if you've spent your entire life in an industry, you know, like I look at, like my brother is a professional bartender. That's all he's ever done.
Oh yeah. And there are bartenders around here that have done it for 30 years and they kill it. And they're probably operating on the hope that soon it's going to turn back around and then they can go back to it and just continue crushing it instead of have to learn a whole new skill set altogether.
Yeah.
Because we're still at the beach and we're still a tourist area, but it ain't going
to
be right now.
And so that might mean you have to move to another market, but I mean, every market is dealing with the limitations of occupancy in a restaurant or a bar. I even see it with our theater being reopened. We're reopened, but you know, we went from 4 nights a week to 1 night a week somewhere else in someone else's house. I don't have control over the schedule. Our capacity is limited. We're doing a fraction of the number of people in the audience that we did before. So thank God I don't rely on that to pay my bills, because that would be scary. But there are some people that's what they rely on. That's their full-time job. And so they're, you know, if they're going to transfer skill sets, they also, you know, there's unconscious bias for employers. Like, well, I don't know if I want to hire a magician to be a nurse's assistant. I don't know. Well, maybe. Right? Like, it's just not going to be that simple to do. So any tips that you might have around people who either their mortgage situation is a mess, or they've been saving to buy a home. They were going to do it next year. Then they lost their job this year. And when it goes to, you know, showing 2 years of income and yada, 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 what does that look like for people who either want to get out of their mess or were hoping to buy a house next year?
All right. So there's a few things there. If you have lost your job during COVID and you are back to work again, then we can work around that. If you're, especially if it's in a similar type of industry, because I've closed loans already from, in particular, a borrower who worked for a company for 30 years. He was laid off when COVID happened. He was laid off for maybe 2 months, and then he found a new job in a similar scenario. And we're able to explain that away because of COVID. There are way more guidelines that are connected with COVID, especially checking on employment. So there's been, and it actually loosened up a little bit this week. We'd have to check on to call your actual place of employment the day before closing to be sure, or within 2 days or something, to be sure that you still had a job before we could close. Now that's loosened up a little bit, thank goodness. But if that's happened, if that's your scenario, then yes, it's cool. As long as your credit is where it needs to be and your debt to income is where it needs to be, we can work around that. Now, I had someone who was a bartender, lost their job and collected unemployment for, you know, the last few months, and then didn't have a job yet and wanted to try to get a mortgage. That ain't gonna fly. You gotta have a job. And really what we're looking for is a job history that is solid. Now, if you're self-employed, and I think that's what you were running into, Gina, is if you're self-employed, we've gotta see 2 solid years of employment. However, I do have a new buddy in our investor market that can do what we call a bank statement loan. A bank statement loan is a separate product, a lot riskier product, so therefore you're going to have a lot higher interest rate, much higher, until you can get your ducks in a row and refinance. But that is basically take 12 to 24 months of your bank statements and see your overall, you know, net deposits and see what your income comes out to be, you know, less expenses and what have you. But in self-employed, it's been a lot trickier with COVID as well, because then, example, I've got a self-employed borrower who's pretty solid. Like, she's been employed for 18 years, self-employed 18 years, and we've got, you know, that part's fine. But we're going to have to prove within 20 days of closing that this individual is still self-employed. So therefore, we need to see, you know, receipts or invoices or what have you, just to prove, yes, I'm still self-employed. But yeah, definitely need 2 good years of showing that so that we can utilize that income. Yeah. And if you're just, not just, but if you work W-2, then we just need to see a good solid couple year work history without any gaps that don't make sense. Like if you had a week gap between this job and that job, that's one thing. If you've got a 3 month gap, aside from the COVID gap that we all understand at this point, then that's going to come into question, like what was going on there.
What if you go from self-employed to working for somebody else, and now you're on a new job with all this self-employment behind you, plus a COVID year? What does that mess look like?
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun. But I would say definitely get a handful of months of employment with this new entity so that we can show that you're going to last maybe 3 to 6 months. And especially if you're suddenly going into a new job that makes you substantially mm-hmm. more money. Okay. That's always a good thing. And in the past, you know, when I purchased my very first house, what we did, we literally, in this scenario that you could utilize for self-employed. So I was self-employed. I was selling real estate. My ex-husband had literally just gotten hired at Legends in Concert as one of the musicians on the stage. And we were still able to get our loan by a really great loan officer at that time. We got a letter from the company that stated that their last drummer position had been there for 16 years and they intended to, you know, they keep their employees, and it worked. And I was actually able to use that same trick for some other borrowers later on.
Okay, that's good to know.
If you can get, if you've got that kind of scenario and you're kind of new to this job, and I think, you know, the guidelines are tight with COVID, but there's also, as long as the name of the game with mortgage is the paperwork all has to add up.
Yeah.
It has to show exactly what's going on.
So if an employer wrote a letter that said, we have so much work in business that this employee, yes. we can't foresee them leaving anytime soon.
Yeah, it's a sure thing. The other thing is, especially, example, I've got borrowers who are selling their home up north. They're moving to our area and they're starting brand new jobs. So you can do it with a letter of engagement, but the letter of engagement has to have certain criteria, and there's a whole bunch of different scenarios, but it just basically, in a nutshell, needs to say, hey, this is how many hours the person's going to work. This is how much they'll be paid. And from there, then you are probably going to be okay.
Okay.
Hopefully. There's my little disclaimer. But yeah, it is, especially if it's a very well-known entity that has a solid business history and tends to keep their employees for a long time, you got a better chance.
And this would probably be a good time to make a disclaimer that these are not the feelings or thoughts or beliefs of US Mortgage. This is Rachel Pitts's opinions on her experiences,
yes.
in mortgage and real estate. Just put that disclaimer in there,
yes,
for legal
you.
Purposes.
Thank you. And definitely, you know, I don't know everything. I still bring everything before my branch manager and my regional managers anytime I have something going on, because they're more schooled on the guidelines than me,
yeah.
because their job is to make sure they're up on that stuff. I'm out there,
yeah.
I'm hunting and killing. So if I'm wrong, forgive me.
Yep.
I'm not always
you're
right.
Hunting, and then you're eating what you hunt. Just before we wrap up, just kind of going back to the beginning of this where we talked about, you know, mortgage is a sales job. You know, you were able to have built in prospects because of relationships and the importance of that. I don't think we touched on, like, how did your boss, Mike, like, come around to, how did you know him? Were you already doing work with him? Like, how did he come around to recruiting you?
Oh, yeah. He, so in the past, one of the little tricky tricks that mortgage loan officers do to, and everybody does this in sales, is if you've got a prospect that you want to wine and dine and win their business, then, you know, he would take me to lunch and discuss stuff, and we'd just chat about things and then establish that relationship. And so meeting up with realtors and taking them to lunch and, you know, how I can help them. What I've done too is help new realtors by helping coach them with how I got started. That's been actually a really good benefit for me. But Mike, just I got to know him over the years, and I like him. I trust him. He's done good work for me in the past, and you know, I just respect him as a human. And I think it's been like 7 years or something,
wow.
that we knew each other. And so when he called me, you know, we already had this mutual respect for one another. And so then when he just basically asked me, and I was like, oh, well, I guess I'll take a look. And it was as easy as that. And then
I don't know if it was as easy as that, 'cause I know you were like, what?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I did my research. Like I said, I asked around, and then I was like, well, can't hurt to just go ahead and take the course and take the test, which apparently it's a lot harder to pass the test the first time than I realized, because I was like, okay, so I did the course and I passed the test, and they're like, what? Okay. And I still wasn't 100% sold on that, and I still have my real estate license. And it's not that I want to back out of mortgage, but it's like, I have my real estate license, so if I have a cash deal, I can do a cash deal that doesn't have mortgage involved. But one thing I'll also say is there's a lot involved in the mortgage process. So if you're getting ready to try to get a mortgage, I advise you to organize your paperwork, because I'm going to ask for it. I personally will hesitate to give any type of pre-approval until I see some paperwork. Unless you're like going out on a Friday night to go make an offer on a house, then I can, you know, do it quickly based on your credit score and what you're telling me, with the disclaimer that I need to see your docs. Mm-hmm. I need to see, most of the time what you need is last 30 days of pay stubs, last 30 days of bank statements, last 2 years of tax returns, and also your last 2 years of W-2s or 1099s. If you have a self-employed business, I need those tax returns. I need a copy of your driver's license.
And your firstborn.
Any type of retirement that you have. And importantly, if you own any other properties, can you please let me know?
There we go.
So, yep. Just start organizing that and put it in a file. Go scan it and put it on your desktop and keep it in the file until your loan closes, in case we ask for it.
Hey, I'll tell you that going through COVID and applying for a PPP loan actually got me super organized, and having all of my docs together, which, because I got all of my docs together on all of my tax returns and, you know, net worth statement, and all of those things are in place, which then it became super easy to put my application in to become a woman certified business that I have put off for like 5 years, because the hassle of it was getting all the paperwork together. And I'm like, oh, I just did this to get a PPP loan. Well, that was inspiring.
Yeah. The more paperwork, if you're thinking about buying a home, the more paperwork you have organized up front, it's going to make it less stressful. Because what happens is, A lot of people that I speak to are like, they're out there with their agent, they haven't gotten pre-qualified, which is not a very good idea, but, or they found a house and it's a fast moving market and they want to make an offer, and then all of a sudden it's like a panic, because they're trying to close on time and they have to organize all this stuff. So if you're even thinking about it, just go, oh, where are my tax returns for the last 2 years? Just
get your stuff together and have it.
Yep, and have it, and it'll make the process a lot smoother. And we tend to be as detail oriented as possible up front, because I just, you know, I don't like to have people panic at the end. But also be aware that it's moving very slow. This is important for right now, because people are all stressed out. They're stressed out because of COVID. They're stressed out because of homeschool. They're stressed out because they don't know what's going on and they haven't been able to go on vacation. They're stressed out for all the reasons. So everybody is super stressed out, and that's what makes my job stressful right now, because even if we close them 2 weeks early or one day late or whatever, everybody's still stressed out. So I would just caution you to be aware that title work is going very slow. Appraisals are going very slow, and it's making the whole machine work very, very slowly. Some of the big banks are taking forever, and we're a small, you know, a mortgage brokerage, so we don't have all of the, you know, slow moving dinosaur parts of some of the big banks, but everything's moving slow. So be patient. My one piece of advice.
Well, this has been awesome for anybody who wants to get their stuff in order, or anybody who's in business or in sales, to think about the importance of relationships and referrals. And the other thing that came to my mind really quickly was anyone in direct sales, which we don't really have a lot of people on here in direct sales. Nothing against it, but there are a lot of people in direct sales who are constantly trying to build a team to have underneath them, and you know, it's annoying how they go at it trying to recruit people, in my opinion. Like, there's someone in particular I'm thinking about who is always like, I need a team. I need a team. You should sell my products, be on my team. Maybe if you spent time really building a relationship and going to lunch and spending time to get to know somebody and creating the know, like, and trust, People Buy You. That's a little Jeb Blunt plug right there in his book. But I've believed it since I read it years ago. People buy you. People are attracted to you. And that takes time to build that relationship. That doesn't happen overnight. Now, of course, we can help you with that with some improv skills, and we can get you there faster. There, I got all the plugs in. I got all the things in. This is great having you on as a co-host and a guest.
Yeah, I hope I got that information right. I still consider myself kind of new to that part of the industry, and there's so much to learn, and it's always changing. But, you know, I appreciate you
sure. taking the
room. Hopefully it helped somebody out there.
Awesome. I hope, Warners, you got something out of this today, some kind of nugget. If you did, share it with us. And really what we would love you to share is share our episodes and put them out there as a resource to other women or men that are looking to up-level their business game. And if you want more information about us, just go to womenyourmotherwondersyourabout.com, and all the things are there. I'm there. Rachel's there. Keith is there. And all of our socials are there. All of the links. Am I missing anything? Is that... Did I get it all?
That's it.
I think I got it all. All right, Warners.
Thanks for listening.
Peace out.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, don't... It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof. Monkey, monkey.